It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and closet busters. It's time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. It's me, Rick Clemens, that coming out coach, the guy that helps you simplify the chaos and helps you make those big, bold moves in life, regardless of what those closets are that you're coming out of. And today I'm going to talk about the closet of, well, you know, hey, if all else fails, you got to just go create your own news. You got to create your own voice, because I want you to imagine living in a small town that, well, literally for all intents and purposes, it is really considered a suburb of Chicago. But what's interesting, there's a little twist here. It's in the corner of another state. In fact, it's in a state where people can get fired for being gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender. It's in a state where the now evangelical Christian governor is now actually the vice president of our country. And it's also in a state where, you know, interpreting the Bible is really what drives federal and state laws rather than the federal and state constitutions. So what are you going to do when you live in a state like that to make sure your voice, your community is taken care of? Well, you kind of become the voice yourself. And today my guest is coming on to talk about how he and his husband have created a voice in their neck of the woods. He's from Michigan City, Indiana, and he's going to talk about why it became important, what he's done, share a little bit of his own coming out journey with us, and give us some insights of why this is so important to do. Please welcome to the Coming Out Lounge my guest, John Livelsberger. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, absolutely, man. So you and I connected through another friend, I believe, through Facebook, and now here we are. So once again, awesome. The beauty of social media and finding people that you never would have found unless you were connected. So, and the whole reason we got connected was really about what you and your husband have created without in Michigan City, right?
Well, yeah. Long story short, we had went out for a drink on a Sunday night, and I had an acquaintance come up to us, and she was like, what is this religious freedom thing, and how is it going to affect my marriage in a couple of weeks? And I said, you know, and being the news junkie I am and trying to pay attention of the laws that are passed in Indianapolis, but that will affect our lives. And by reference, we're only 45 minutes from downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. We have the Chicago feel. We have Cubs, Bears, Sox fans, Bulls fans, Blackhawks fans, and that's us. We live in the state of Indiana. So I was basically, after I explained it to her, it became very bothersome to me that we have a very large LGBT community in Northwest Indiana, very large. I can't swing a stick without hitting a homosexual. Okay. And we have no news. Hmm. We get Chicago news. The majority of us get Chicago news. We don't get the closest other, you know, big city to us is South Bend, Indiana. Unless you have a certain cable company, you don't get any stations from South Bend, Indiana. So you have to really look for the news yourself. Yeah. And a lot of people in this corner of the state did not know what the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was. So we started a Facebook page 2 years ago called Michigan City in Northwest Indiana, just to kind of touch base. At the time, I was writing for an LGBT news online news magazine in Chicago called Opus News. And I had, my first assignment was to get an interview with Major Stephen Schneider Hill, who is an LGBT activist. And he said something to me, always trust the power of your own voice. And I took it literally. So we started out in Michigan City in Northwest Indiana. And then 2 years later, it's kind of morphed into outinmichigancity.com. We have The Beacon, which is our online newspaper. The paper I was writing for, unfortunately, went under. They allowed me to cover the events and things going on in Northwest Indiana, and we do have quite a few. So, and that's it. And I just wanted people to know what is going on with the state legislature, because I think both Democrats and Republicans are at fault. They don't mind us not knowing what's going on.
Right.
They don't mind, you know, they're like, oh, they don't know what's going on in Northwest Indiana? Well, that's fine, because then there's nobody there to question that. And it's not both political parties. It's not just so. And that's why we did it.
But don't you think this is pretty common in a lot of marginalized communities that, well, they don't need to know. So the less we can make them not know, and of course we can draw all sorts of parallels right now to what the fuck's going on in our country.
Right. Absolutely. I think I do. But I think, why make their job easier?
Yeah, exactly. So I love this statement that he shared with you about always trust the power of your own voice. What does that mean to you, John? I'm just curious.
That means, you know, everybody... What we're trying to do with the Beacon is not just your typical, not that there's anything wrong with them, but your typical bar rag. You go into a gay bar, you have their, you know, you have free newspapers for the community. You've got, you know, what rave is going on and what bathhouse specials are going on for that particular day. And, you know, and that's fine. You know, Steamworks Chicago came to me and said, I want to pay you $1,000 a month to advertise. I'd take the money.
Sure.
But we wanted, it's not just about dancing and clubbing and everything else. We're trying to create something new and something different. I cover hard news. I have a blog called The 219. I have a gentleman who writes for us. His name is Daniel Ashley Williams. He lives in southern Indiana, in Vincennes, Indiana, right by the Kentucky-Illinois border. He's HIV positive in a place where it's not comfortable to be HIV positive, not that it is anywhere. But for him, he writes a blog. I have a transgender man named Kane Richards who writes a blog about his experiences. I have a transgendered woman who's, you know, talking about her experiences. I have a drag queen that does a sex, love, and advice column, mm-hmm. you know, for some, you know, fun. You know, so we're trying to make this, one of the things that we went to a march for RefRa, an anti-RefRa march in Indianapolis. And one thing I saw is everyone down there is so organized. I mean, in a way that brought a tear to my eye. It made me, I mean, they were so organized and so supportive. And we don't have that here. Everybody, you take a marginalized community and then everybody goes off into their own marginalized groups.
Yes.
And we don't have any, you know, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring things closer together. Mm-hmm. And I think other people are too. We had a gentleman start an LGBT support group about a month ago. We've got a set of performance group of drag queens called Welcome to the Other Side that, They're like the Grateful Dead in Spanx. I mean, they have a following. People follow them. And so wherever they're performing, you can expect people coming from all different counties to see them.
That's awesome.
So it's, I mean, we have the support here and I think we have the love. We just, I think we just need to get the energy going.
You know, the universe just divinely delivers things. And as you were talking, I thought this is really ironic because I have been in the last couple of weeks on my travels and speaking in front of a couple of groups who are doing in their own way exactly what you just talked about. I spoke in front of a PFLAG organization in Bakersfield, California, which is a good sized community. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be that two women were there from Bishop, California, which is a very small mountain community. And they've decided they're going to start their own PFLAG chapter there because there's no support. There's no place for the LGBTQ individuals to like be.
Right.
And as you were talking, I'm like, it's so interesting that here out of the blue, you and I connect. I just met them. And then I actually was thinking as you were speaking also about my own community. I live in Riverside, California. For all intents and purposes, it could be considered a suburb of Los Angeles.
Okay.
But it could also be considered its own unique population, a big enough city to have something LGBTQ related. We do have a couple of gay bars. We did have an LGBTQ quote center for a little while, but there's not enough support because everybody either goes to Palm Springs, which isn't far, or San Diego or LA to do their quote, what I would call normal gay life. You know, you go to the bars there and all this sort of stuff. So it's interesting to hear you talk because those two things came rushing forward to me, how similar what you're talking about could be replicated wherever you choose to start to go replicate your support, to build your voice and be heard. And I think this is a valuable thing that a lot of people who listen to this podcast need to hear because they feel so isolated. They feel so out there where there's nobody like me.
Well, and we did have a gay bar. I mean, Michigan City, back even in, I think, to the early 80s and stuff like that, we did have a gay bar. We lost our gay bar about 10 years ago. And with, you know, the onset of Grindr and Scruff and all the online hookup apps, you know, why go out when you can order in? Mm-hmm. So those things have been really detrimental, I think. I mean, we've got gay bars that have been, you know, in Boys Town in Chicago for 20, 30 years, and all of a sudden they're closing. I heard of a couple gay bars, or at least one gay bar in Indianapolis that had been around forever, and, you know, it's closing. You know, and with the acceptance, you know, I can go into any bar in this town, one specific bar that we would go to. People know us, and people know we're gay, and we have friends, and we're very welcome. We have been for years. We have another bar here in town that is letting us put on karaoke on Thursdays, mm-hmm. where, you know, the guys, you know, we come out and, you know, we sing. Well, I don't sing, but everyone else does. And, you know, it's advertised on the Facebook page. And, you know, we do have a community here. So yeah. It's just finding those social niches
yes.
to get everybody to, you know, and it's not all about getting laid. Not that right. there's anything wrong with that. But right. it's, you know, about forging friendships. And especially in the political climate that we have right now, mm-hmm. we really need unity. And yes. another part of starting the website is kind of my way of fighting back. It is, you know, I'm not going to, this is my part of the world, and I'm not going to let, you know, all the progress we made under President Obama just be rolled back.
Right. But don't you think too, that when we can do something like what you're doing, when we can take a stand and create something, you do kind of start covering all those bases that kind of are slipping away, so to speak, the bars that are closing, the, you know, not finding the unity, but now we can bring that together. And what I hear over and over and over and over again, because I tend to get the same gay men, not the same exact gay man, but the same profile gay men working with me. Oh, I can't find anywhere to meet people. Really? Let's get real about this. What you're doing is you're looking in all the wrong places, but the more we could bring these sort of things together, where you can find a bar that'll let you do your thing, you know, once a week, or you start a paper that then leads to showing up at different events. I think it's so funny that people think there's no way to do some of this stuff yet. By taking a stand, doing something in your own community, bringing it alive, even if it's just a once a month meetup of, hey, we're queer, we're here, let's get together. You know, my husband and I have been going to a sacred men's kind of get together, which
kind of Lilith Fair only for penises?
Well, kind of, but it's a little bit different because it's open to anybody.
Oh, okay.
What it seems to be attracting is, because the guy who does it is gay,
okay.
attracting quite a few gay men, but it's actually attracting a lot of straight men. And what I find so beautiful about it is what I just said. It's attracting gay men and straight men, and we're bonding together doing drum circles and yoga and things such as that. And so I think this is what you're kind of doing, is you're creating that grassroots sort of thing of, we can build community, but all we have to do is go build community, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Do it with a purpose.
Right.
So what's been some of the challenges, man, of getting this thing really going? And
Money. I have this very inconvenient thing that I have to do every single day. It's called going to work.
Yes.
And it's, you know, my husband, bless his heart, is amazingly supportive. He is kind of the silent partner in this, but, you know, he's been in community mental health for 25 years. So he has other reasons to be pissed off. Mm-hmm. Whereas I am, you know, I can basically focus all my anger and the injustice, you know, happening to the LGBT community. And so he's been great and he's been supportive. He's not as political and as angry as I am. Now, he has been, since Trump took office, we can't go a night without having CNN or another news outlet because he's getting that wrapped up into it. But the challenge is money. I mean, I'm going to be real honest. Our website has been donated to us by some really good friends of ours, and their names and their hosting thing is at the bottom of the website. So if anybody goes to outinmichigancity.com and they need hosting, please check them out. They're great guys. But, you know, they donated the website, you know, getting people to scheduling events and getting people to actually come out to them. A lot of these events go on during the week. There's a lot of protests that go on in our community in Indianapolis on the weekday. And, you know, those of us who work, it's hard to get, you know, down there on a Wednesday to protest against RFRA or, you know, whatever the supermajority Republican state legislature is trying to pull it at any given time. So, but
what's the ultimate thing that you would like to see come from what you've created?
Peace on earth, cure to AIDS. Those are lofty goals.
But they're goals. I mean, they're beautiful goals. I mean, I think that, you know, what I find so interesting, one of my mentors said, you know, when I first started, and I don't know that I've actually, I don't know that I've actually talked about this on the air, so this is probably a good place to talk about it. When I first started as a coming out coach, I immediately catapulted and started getting a lot of good coverage and everything. The irony is I almost went broke doing it too, because it's very difficult to get money from people who are hiding in the closet when sometimes the people they need to get the money from to help them come out of the closet are the very people they don't want to come out to. So a spouse, a parent, you know, even an aunt, uncle, or a friend. And so it is one of the challenges I think you have when you're working in these very advocate-driven human rights sort of things, is you're going to always be looking for the money. You're going to be looking for it. And no matter how beautiful it is, the work that you're doing, it's going to be tough because you've got to find the right audience, the right backers, all that sort of stuff to truly make it work together. A small venture.
Well, I spend a small fortune on advertising, on Facebook advertising. I don't know if you can tell by the wall behind me, but my husband and I love comic books, and my comic book budget has been, I take all that now, and we don't buy comic books anymore. I use it to, Daniel Williams writes blog about Ryan White, who was, a 13-year-old in the 80s and 90s, who, 80s and early 90s, he passed away, but who got HIV in Kokomo, Indiana, in 1983. And that was a big deal here. That was a big deal here because all he wanted to do was go to school. And, so the 8th of this month was the anniversary of his death, and Danny wrote something really cool about it. And so I want people to read that. So to get it in people's Facebook feeds, I'm always throwing in, $5 here, $2 there. Yep. I got my bill at the end of the last month and it was, $50.
Yeah.
And you don't realize how much, I'm glad to give up comic books, for something like this, because people are actually reading it.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes here's what I know too. So this podcast is a perfect example of it. And again, I know I've never talked about this. I don't directly make money on this podcast. I make it indirectly because people listen and then people come to do the work with me. But my monthly nut for this podcast is close to $500 a month by the time I do everything. Now, granted, it's a marketing machine, okay? Mm-hmm. But what I know and why I love doing this podcast is that this serves a purpose for people who this may be the only way they can get support and help without anybody knowing they're getting support and help.
Right.
They listen to this because it's easy to listen to this. If they need to delete it off their phone as soon as they listen to it, they can do that. If they need to delete it off their computer, they can do that. So it's one of those mediums that it's my give back to the community that I know is adding value. It's giving people hope, and it's showing people, like we're doing today, we're showing people an avenue of, if you need to create advocacy in your neck of the woods, if you need to get some news, don't be afraid to start something. And in this day and age, yes, it takes a little bit of money, but there's so many ways to, whether it's using a Square website or whatever, Squarespace website or whatever, you can actually do this stuff pretty easily.
Definitely.
And make a difference.
Well, we have a way to communicate that the world has never seen before. And, yes. It has its disadvantages with, fake news. And then, but it also has advantages for people who really just want to try and reach out to other people and say to them, you are not alone. Mm-hmm. And if I would have had this when I was coming out or anything, right. When I was, I think I had my first sexual experience when I was 13, and it was not with an older man. It was with, someone my age. And I was too young to know anything really. And then when I started to come out, when I started to kind of wrap my head around who I might be, I thought I was a monster, because really the only examples you had in, 1990 of a gay man was, the Buffalo Bill killer and the Silence of the Lambs. And I did not want to be that guy. And so then, right out of high school, I had met a woman, and it was fun and nice, and we had a good time. And then we got really serious, and it became this codependent, always fighting thing. She had a lot of baggage. I obviously had a lot of baggage, but didn't know it. And not to mention, I was a selfish 20-year-old guy who, wanted to hang out with his friends more than, I didn't know what being in a relationship meant. So it was really hard. And we lived together for a while. We ended up getting married. She got pregnant. My daughter's going to be, her birthday's actually tomorrow. So and then 4 months into the marriage, I was in one of my best friends at the time. I was in his wedding and I was in my tuxedo and getting ready to go to the church and stand up with him. And she came up to the window and said, "I'm leaving you right now." I'm like, "What?" And she's like, "I just can't do this anymore. I don't want to do it. I'm leaving you right now." So I went to the wedding, performed my duties, went to the reception, and got so incredibly drunk that I did something that is amazingly hard to talk about, but I will talk about it. But I don't even remember it, but I got caught in a compromising position with a gay guy who was there, you know, as a guest of the bride behind the reception hall by some friends we worked with. We all worked at the same place. I was caught red-handed when, you know, in my mind, any, you know, experiences I had had with sex with a person of the same gender was always disconnected. Mm-hmm. I always managed to unplug from that experience, and that was somebody else. So there was no hiding it. There was no going back. And believe me, I tried to hide it. I tried to say it wasn't true. I tried to, you know, but it was probably at the time the single most horrific thing in my life. And yeah, suicide crossed, you know, and then I'm like, well, maybe she won't hear about it. You know, maybe she won't hear about it. She heard about it. So then through the divorce proceedings and everything else, it was AIDS tests, HIV tests, accusations of being, you know, this horrible person. And then, you know, I had met through my job a woman who was just amazing. She still is amazing. And I was 21 at the time, and she was in her early 30s and just in a beautiful, beautiful lady. She still is. And we, you know, hit it off and we became very good friends. And I think I mistook probably what could have been my best friend for somebody who maybe I'm like, hey, you know, we ended up going out for a long time and we ended up, you know, actually getting married. And I ended up getting married a second time. And before I got married, though, I was finally able to reconcile in my head these experiences that I had with men. So I did tell her. But in the end, it was really hard. I could not continue with, you know, what I said I would do, which was, you know, be with her, because it wasn't fair to her. It wasn't fair to me. And, you know, it was just when you're in the closet, anybody is listening out there, when you're in the closet, it's so hard because you're watching your mannerisms. You're watching every little thing you do. You're watching your voice, how it comes out. You're constantly guarded, and it is so exhausting.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was getting ready to say. For those of you listening, if you're feeling exhausted, you are hearing a voice of truth here, because I'm sitting here nodding my head. I mean, I know you guys are only hearing the audio part of this, but we are both sitting here nodding our heads. I'm just totally in line with what John's saying, because it becomes the exhaustion point. This becomes the point where the dual living starts to wear you down.
It really did. And, you know, we parted ways very, you know, we're still good friends. She has kids. I still love them. They're still family to me, but it was not fair to me. It was not fair to her. And we finally had to, you know, I finally had to make a change. And making that change, not knowing what was going to happen the next day, not knowing what was going to happen the year down the road. And she was angry. I mean, she's not an angry person. And, you know, anybody in that situation would be angry.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her. And, you know, we were never a couple that fought. My husband and I fight more than, you know, she and I did. And we were never a couple that, you know, really never got along. I mean, she's just, you know, we just always did. And, you know, but she looked at me and out of anger and out of hurt, and I don't blame her for this, she said, "You're never going to find anybody who loves you as much as I do." Mm. And that was scary. That was scary. And you got to understand that the town I grew up in, now I live in Michigan City, and maybe to you, this might be a small town. To me, it's pretty big. We've got a pretty good population here. Northwest Indiana itself is pretty good. But the town I grew up in was so small, it had one stoplight. It still does. And, you know, so sex, even between a man and a woman, was not ever discussed.
Right.
Well, in my family, you know, and I grew up without my dad. You know, my mom, for the most part, raised me on her own. So it was, you hear different things about, you know, being gay. And I had been being called, you know, a fag from when I was in second grade. I mean, I was the only one in class being called that. So it was, you know, and I'm like, I go to my mom, I'm like, what does this mean? It's hard, especially for these kids in rural communities, rural communities in the Midwest. And
well, I think that's why this is so important. What you're doing, John, is, you know, people talk to me a lot about, oh, you must have lots of clients in California. I'm like, hell no. You know, there's very few of my clients that are in California. My clients are in Nebraska, Texas. Let's see, who did I talk to today? I talked to one in Texas. I talked to one in Illinois. I talked to one yesterday in Arkansas. It's all in those places where, okay, there may be resources in Indianapolis. There may be a resource, you know, in Little Rock, Arkansas. But when you get out to those places, even though Michigan City is a pretty good sized town, there's not a lot of resources. And that's where the help is truly, truly, truly needed.
Well, and to our credit, we've got a great bunch of parents that are getting together, and we are getting our own PFLAG chapter here in Northwest Indiana, stationed out of Michigan City. That's going to be great. And we should have one, because in like places like Fort Wayne, there's PFLAG. In Indianapolis, there's PFLAG. Yep. In Evansville, Indiana, there's PFLAG. You know, Northwest Indiana isn't just cut off by the fact of news. No one thinks about us.
Yes.
I mean, I can literally see the we're on Lake Michigan. I'm on the, you know, the tip of Lake Michigan. Right. I can literally go to the beach right now on a clear day and I can see the city of Chicago. So no one really thinks of us, and no one wants to. You know, we're, I think we're the last to get, like, you know, tax money for, you know, fixing the roads and everything else. So it's really frustrating when you have all these great organizations that are peppered throughout Indiana. And despite what Mike Pence has done to the state, I promise you all, please come here. You will find a friendly, nice bunch of folks that don't care if you're gay. Yeah. And, you know, this was a 2-year layover for me. When I moved to Michigan City, I had found work here. It was a 2-year layover, and then it was off to Chicago. I had just gotten, you know, out of a bad relationship with my ex-boyfriend, and I'm like, you know, I need to get my life straight, my head on straight. I'm going to hang out here for a couple of years. And then I moved to Chicago. And then I met Chris, and everything changed. And we ended up buying a house here. And we have had many, many arguments about moving to Chicago, me wanting to go and him not wanting to go. And he finally said to me, he looked at me and he said, John, it is so easy to be gay in Chicago. You can do the most good here.
Yes.
He said, we can go to Chicago anytime you want. But living here is where we can make more connections and, you know, maybe do something. Yeah. And yeah, I kind of took it to heart. So well, he won that argument. I let him win that argument.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's the beauty, and that's the beautiful message out of this conversation. I mean, there's lots of beautiful messages, and I'm gonna just share something with the listeners. I have to tell you that when we talked about what we're going to talk about today, which really we did literally 3 minutes before we turned the microphone on here for you listeners. That's how I do it. I go shoot from the hip and everything. I just want to say, first of all, John, thank you for sharing your story, because you had said, yeah, I'll try to talk about it. It's hard. And you just, that's why I got really quiet and just let you go, man. So thank you.
Oh, thanks, man.
For open about that. But secondly, the underlying story is, there's ways to find what you need, and there's ways to create what you need, and there's ways to find community and build community no matter where you are. And I think the more we do this, the more we give ourselves permission to go be those voices and to step out. And I've realized in some places it's going to be extremely difficult. It may be so difficult that you will fear for your safety. So I'm not advocating that, but where you feel like you can do some stuff, go make it happen. Just like John's done. He's done a beautiful job, and he's continuing to do a beautiful job. And I think he's kind of a banner, you know, a poster child, so to speak, for let's strike it, you know, let's put our line in the sand, let's go do something for, you know, our community and find a way to do it. If you could leave the listeners with anything as we wrap up here, John, that would really inspire them to just.
Yeah. If I could just say one more thing. Yeah. I mean, if you're worried about, like, the closest person to me in my life was my mom. She had me when she was 16 years old in a small town that at the time really didn't like that kind of thing. Like single 16-year-old, you know. So my mom, in a lot of ways, is like my big sister. We talk to each other in a way that no other mom and son should probably talk to each other. Yep. My grandparents were like the mom and dad, you know. But my mom, I think one of the things that held me back from coming out and just breaking that breaking through the closet, I guess, is that I thought my mom would think I was a monster. Mm-hmm. I thought she would think I was damaged or horrible or some sort of weird pedophile. And I thought that she would think that. And I didn't want my mom to think that. My mom is the most supportive. My mom is like the mom on Queer as Folk, only without the flair. She is, you know, she's like, hey, Mr. Sister. And I'm like, Mom, stop watching Will and Grace, please.
Right.
You know, and I get so many of my friends who are gay or lesbian, and they're like, oh, your mom is so cool. And yeah, my mom is cool. So if you are worried about that one person who, you know, and don't get me wrong, when I came out to her, there was some drama. I'm not going to lie. But it was, it's fine. She actually likes my husband better than she likes me, I think. So it's been a very, it's been a journey. And it's been hard at points, but I wouldn't change it for the world. And I encourage anybody out there who is struggling right now to just, you know, be who you are, be true to yourself.
That's a beautiful way to bring this to a close, because what John really just said is so, I'm going to say it again, so true, that you're going to be surprised by some of the people that you come out to that you thought might have a hard time, and you're going to be surprised by those who have a hard time that you didn't expect to. But at the end of the day, at the end of the show, at the end of the life, if you're true to yourself, you've actually lived the very best life you possibly can. And I think that's something we all need to think about, whether it's about our coming out to be gay, bi, trans, whatever that is, or just living our life. Trust yourself that things are the way they're supposed to be. John, I just want to say thank you so much for being here. And we're sharing his lovely little pug with us right now. Which one is this one?
This is Baxter.
Oh,
awesome. I have the curtains closed and the door closed and the sign on the door that says don't come in recording, and right. And he heard a motorcycle go by. He doesn't like those.
That's so okay. This is part of the beautiful live podcast world. I have a really great friend who has a beautiful podcast, Jonathan Fields, who has the Good Life Project podcast, and it's huge. I mean, it's got hundreds, I don't even know, it may even be into the millions of downloads at this point. And he does it in New York City, and every so often you'll hear the sirens of New York City, and he just keeps going. And I think this is the beauty of this medium, is we can say fuck you and all this stuff, and then we get to have the beautiful, beautiful extra guests of our little furry friends ashore. So, but anyway,
well, thank you for having me on. And
absolutely, John,
I appreciate
and keep
it.
Doing what you're doing, and hopefully somebody will be hearing this. Hopefully somebody in your neck of the woods that really could use that understanding of sometimes the simplest thing is just to be your big, bold you. And with that, we're going to wrap it up for this week. Never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and this has been the Coming Out Lounge, and we will catch you in just another few days. Take care, everyone.
Hey, closet dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to invite you to check something out. You know, for all the years that I've been a coming out coach, one thing I've learned is sometimes people come to do the work with me and they only need a little bit of help to get over something very particular and very important to them. It could be reconciling their religion and sexuality. Maybe it's learning how to have the difficult conversations where they say, I'm gay. Possibly it could be, oh my God, I'm out of the closet, but now how do I do this same-sex dating and mating sort of thing? Well, what I can tell you is throughout the years, there are common things that show up over and over and over again. And what I've heard most from my clients and listeners of the podcast is, I want a way to work with you just on these particular subjects. Yay, I am so excited because I've taken the action and I've made this possible. So how do you find out about these particular programs? You go to thecomingoutcoach.com, or if you're on the show page right now listening to the podcast or have just listened to the podcast, over to the right-hand side of the podcast description, everything is an icon that says one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button. You'll be taken to a page that describes each of the different 9 sessions I'm offering. They are one-on-one sessions that we can do via phone, Skype, or even FaceTime. They're very action-oriented. We go right to the topic that you want to talk about. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So what more could you ask for? You get me for 90 minutes devoted to you, plus my book. So go check it out. See if there's something that could help you as you step out, step up, and step in to living your powerful truth. Take care. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach. I look forward to working with you.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.